Nice to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Pleased to be back after, 4 days off. I think I had 4 days off. Jim Packard, thank you very much for filling in for me. Appreciate that very much. But it's always nice to come back home, and particularly when we have great guests, as we do every day, to talk about things going on in Wisconsin and elsewhere. And today, we're going to zero in to begin the show on Lake Superior's North Shore. And as I mentioned in my little introduction earlier, it's about a 150-mile-long stretch, lots of parks, forests, streams, rivers, lots of communities. And Deborah Morse Kahn of Minneapolis, Minnesota, who is a specialist in historic preservation and cultural resource management, has put together a book. It's called Lake Superior's Historic North Shore, a guided tour. It's a traveler's companion to Minnesota's historic destinations from Duluth to Grand Portage, and we're really pleased to have her with us today. It's published, by the way, by Minnesota Historical Society Press, so we're really pleased about that and pleased to have her with us. And certainly, if you have some questions as we move along today, as we talk about the North Shore and some of those communities and Deborah's book, I hope you'll join in with those questions. If you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And anywhere else, it's toll-free, and that number is 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Deborah Morse Kahn with us by phone. Deborah, hi. Thanks for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
It is so lovely to be back once again on your show, Larry. Thank you. I miss being in Madison. This will be our first phone visit, but I can close my eyes and I'm back in the studio.
Well,
ready for you.
Well, I'm glad to have you with us here, at least by a phone, if not in person.
Technology's our friend.
That's exactly right. Well, tell you what, there have been several books, I think, written about the North Shore, maybe more than any other Minnesota travel destination. So why write this book?
It's the great question, and it'll probably be my longest answer. I think primarily because, just like Door County for Wisconsin, once you cross the Lester River and you're on the North Shore, it is another world. And because 61 runs along the lip of the lake, if you turn left, you're way up into the Sawtooth. So you're on the main road, and only on the main road, all the way up to the Canadian border. It's like a place apart. And I have probably counted over 100 books in print and maybe out of print on the North Shore, many of which I used for reference, quite a number of excellent guides, topic-specific, those folks who love trekking, those folks who love camping, those who want to know more about state parks. I went up some years ago on a client visit to do what we call an archaeology walkover survey. A client had land on the shore and wanted me to tell them what it was that I was finding, what was left behind. We found a fair amount, but I hadn't been there for probably 20 years. And what shocked me on the trip up and coming home was how greatly the shore was changing. Just everywhere, the pressure for development is enormous. Property values were rising. Many old buildings I'd remembered were gone. There were multimillion-dollar structures now on the shore, expansion everywhere. And people that I met were in a definite rearguard action to protect the history and the land as it was. In driving home, I literally dialed the director of Minnesota Historical Society Press and pitched the book for the 10 miles I could actually get a signal. And before I lost my signal, he'd said, "We'll do it." And he didn't even have a proposal. By the time I got back into St. Paul, we had finalized the agreement and the book began. I felt that I love John Hershey's quote, "The reality is that changes are coming, they must come, and you must share in bringing them." I feel that my best work is helping people accept that change is here, but to gear up for what comes afterwards and be part of that story. And I wanted this book to help people who are living there and teach people who are coming there about what was under their feet and in front of their eyes.
Well, it's a great book for that. I mean, why wouldn't you want to have this? If you're making a visit along that North Shore, it's a guided tour. My goodness, you've laid out a lot of great information. How did you put it together?
I was fortunate to have some modest upfront funding from MHS Press. They have been so supportive. But the key came, and it's the running thread in the book, and hopefully in the acknowledgments at the back, I really do honor. I was fortunate to meet a friend from our family who knew people who knew people who knew people. And if they trust you and you come in well-vetted and spoken for, the doors will open. And it became clear to me that what I was really writing was life beyond Canal Park. I love Duluth and Canal Park, but I needed people to see the treasures that were hiding in plain sight, and that means beyond the great resorts, beyond the restaurants. I wanted even the small communities that are hidden, that you might even drive past, because the 61's been rerouted so many times. I wanted those to be seen and to be understood. And so the book started out with a promise of two tours with maps, and by the time I was done with my poor editor, he had promised seven tours with maps. I'm really very hard to work with because I know what I want, and we got it. And from the lower part of the shore all the way up to Grand Portage, we have maps of places most folks wouldn't know that they could go and should go, and I'm very pleased.
Well, you know, you do answer questions like, how did this lodge or this bridge or this church or maybe this graveyard or whatever, the hotel, the fish house, the lighthouse, the cabin, how did they come to be there? And why do these things look the way they do?
Well, part of the reason they look the way they do is that they've been untouched. And the secret of the North Shore for me as an historic preservation specialist is that a great deal of early structure, old remnants of the dog trail path, cabins have either been lovingly restored and hidden out of sight on private property, or have simply been untouched. And though they look like they are empty, lost, and forlorn, they're not. I learned very quickly that people in villages, even in the long stretches of shore in the unorganized communities, everybody knows the story of the fish house by the shore, the remnant of dog trail here and there. People watch, they take care of things, they're very aware of their story. The North Shore had a very rich settlement history. An unexpected number of nationalities settled there, and it's in the burial grounds that you can see the remnants of the names. What I didn't expect was to find fourth and fifth generation and sometimes sixth still walking around bearing the same family names and wanting to talk. That was a great treat.
Well, let's go back a bit and in time and the native people. Who were the native peoples who lived in that area? And I believe the French explorers and traders came eventually.
Eventually. We had both the Dakota and the Ojibwe in that region before the arrival of Europeans. There was a lot of warfare engagement. Eventually, the Dakota moved west and south, but the Ojibwe stayed, and their earlier settlements are up in the area of Sault Ste. Marie and down at Ile La Pointe, off the Michigan and Wisconsin shores. In time, they came to settle on what we would think of as the mainland around the mouth of the St. Louis River, and then again up at the far end by the Pigeon River. And by the time the Europeans arrived, the French traders, that is exactly where they were. And so that's why the historic forts and trading centers were established there.
Hmm. And obviously the presence of the Europeans changed the lives of the Ojibwe quite a bit.
It did, in some of the expected ways. And the good news is about our education system is that we are very familiar with the full story now in our time. But there are also some unique aspects about the North Shore which delighted me. The expected results were eventually that land was sold and some were moved inland to reservations. That happened at Fond du Lac. So the tiny village of Fond du Lac at the mouth of the St. Louis River is not the same as the Fond du Lac Reservation, which is inland some ways. And then, of course, Grand Portage is on vast reservation lands. But what I didn't expect and have come to greatly appreciate is that the Ojibwe did not disappear. There was a great deal of intermarriage, particularly, but not exclusively, with the French voyageur. Those families had full standing and status. They are still there, and they lived among the European settlers in many of the villages, still do. It is an entirely intermixed district from north to south, and I was delighted. I'm going to highlight particularly Beaver Bay, which is at the midshore, that the family names reflect both French and Ojibwe. There are several burial grounds which show later European settlement that came in. But the Ojibwe and European neighbors lived among each other, helped each other, wholly intersupportive without regard to belief or cultural background.
So that was a good thing.
Oh, it's lovely, and I think very rare for our state story, even our upper Midwest story.
Yeah.
Very rare.
Well, Highway 61 it's called the North Shore Scenic Drive, was honored as Minnesota's only all-American road 6 years ago.
Yes.
So that's pretty cool. And as you mentioned Fond du Lac, and I have to remind people that there's a Fond du Lac in Minnesota as well as
one in Wisconsin, yes.
So that town holds some cultural and historic treasures.
It does. There's some in plain sight and some that you would need to know about. That was my big surprise. I discovered Fond du Lac by coming home on what was to have been the last field trip in the fall of 2006. I decided not to take the interstate, but to come down the shore road as long as I possibly could. And that will take you down St. Louis Bay and around into the mouth of the St. Louis River. And what I found there was not only remnants of what had once been a very prosperous town, brownstone, which we think of as the most popular building material of the late 19th century and early 20th century, had its genesis in the vast quarries at Fond du Lac. They were shipping it as far as Chicago and New York City. The remnants now are some lovely architectural sites. There's a WPA-era bridge. But the big shock that got the book extended in size was the discovery of a faded, much-dated DAR, Daughters of the American Revolution, plaque under the trees in a tiny city park on the river shore, which spoke to the fact that a Northwest Company trading post, the first trading post, had stood in that place. I got the shivers. And once again hit up my poor, beleaguered editor on the road and managed to persuade him that we can't do this book without doing all of Duluth and the South Shore, that it simply could not start by crossing the Lester River and going with Glen Sheen, that everything was connected. Everything was part of everything else. And so from Fond du Lac all the way up the shore through the small towns where U.S. Steel had been, into West Duluth, Central Duluth, and then East Duluth got included.
Deborah Morse Kahn, our guest today from Minneapolis, Minnesota. She is the author of Lake Superior's Historic North Shore, A Guided Tour. It's a traveler's companion to the historic destinations from Duluth to Grand Portage. We're really pleased to have her with us today, published by Minnesota Historical Society Press. If you'd like to join in with a question or a comment, we'd love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And if you'd like to join in as we visit with Deborah Morse Kahn, again, the number to call, we're talking about her book, by the way, Lake Superior's Historic North Shore. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890, 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And before we go back to the phones and to callers, Deborah, let's talk about Duluth for just a minute. It's considered the San Francisco of the Midwest, the zenith city of the unsalted seas, and that's what it was called back in the 1868.
Yes.
And maybe just before we go to the phone, what are some of the attractions people should see there?
Yeah, the joke of calling the book Beyond Canal Park is to not denigrate the extraordinary development that Duluth has established there right in the center of the city, not only for the fact that they've moved a number of National Register properties onto Canal Park, but in my work in historic preservation of structures, it's one of the most thoughtful reuse programs I have seen of historic buildings. It really must not be missed. But the historic lift bridge, which connects it to Minnesota Point, should be followed. If folks are patient, particularly in the summer, you'll be well rewarded. Minnesota Point is anybody who's been to the Florida Keys knows that it's just one long two-lane road threading its way down the islands. This is much the same. And Minnesota Point was its own village. There is an historic lighthouse remnant at the far end, beautiful beaches. To the north and to the south of the central part of the city, which, by the way, is one great historic district, a National Register district, and the map for central Duluth shows folks not only where they will find that, but we do have links after every chapter, including that one, on how to find the online information from the National Register about each building. West Duluth was its own community and absorbed many smaller villages as it grew. It is truly, truly beautiful and has its own small tour. And then north of Canal Park, once you pass Fitgers, most people are very familiar with that beautiful brewery and how that's been restored. You're into East Duluth, running along Superior Street. It, too, absorbed many small villages. It is filled with magnificent residences along the main road and up the hill. We have a number of National Register properties there detailed in the book. And all the way along, on your right is the great Sweetwater Sea, Gitche-Gumee, and so the water is always with you. And that's where the name comes from. It is the zenith, the ultimate destination of ocean-going vessels. It's the ultimate destination for ore boats, for the delivery of ore, for the shipping of lumber, for the shipping of fish, some of which went to New York and some went to San Francisco. It's the ultimate, the zenith city. I love that name.
It's a great name.
It is.
Well, I tell you what, we have Susie in New Berlin who would like to get on. So let's go to Susie. Hi, Susie. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was just listening to this. It reminded me of a friend of mine. When I went to school at University of Minnesota, she was from a Finnish and Swedish family, I believe. Her grandpa had emigrated here and had opened a little series of cottages near... Maybe you can help me. Two rivers or three rivers?
There's two harbors.
Oh, yes.
Rivers and three rivers would be on your way to Door County.
Yeah, so yeah, two,
right. Okay.
Two harbors.
Two harbors.
Okay.
Yes.
And a lovely little series of little tiny cottages that he built himself, and then he and her father were still running them. I don't know if he was actually still running them by the time I was up there in the 70s, but... We went there for her wedding, and everybody stayed at these little cottages. And September 2nd, I remember, we had a hard freeze. And she was laughing about how so many people that would rent these little places year after year after year, one of the couples said that they always loved to go there for the 4th of July to see the lilacs bloom.
Yes.
Because
Larry, did you set her up on this question?
No.
Because it's perfect. Thank you for telling everybody about the existence of these little cabins. Because I think more than any other issue I can think of, the disappearance of these cabin resorts was driving my book.
You are so fortunate
to have not only to have seen a cabin resort still maintained, but being wonderfully happily used.
Right on the lake.
Yes. And what I loved about Two Harbors is that even on the city shoreline, particularly on the north side, are remnants of some of these types of cabins on what is Agate Bay and Flood Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I even know where this particular cabin resort would be. They're not only very popular, but you were probably told that the same families will make their reservation for the year ahead
right.
before they pack and leave.
Yep.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. And that was the thing. She said the lilacs bloom around the 4th of July.
That's
and
right.
Everybody gets all excited about it. So.
That's right. I've tried to highlight in the book a number of these family resorts. They're into third and fourth generation ownership. Many of them, most of them, are lovingly maintained. And particularly in the district from Two Harbors up to Beaver Bay, but not to exclude any of the other communities along the stretch of shore. When folks find these on the tour, as you learned, many people would come and see these cabins. I'm sure that you saw folks driving in just to look
mm-hmm.
When you were there, and the sign said, no rentals available, absolutely true, right into the first freeze.
Yeah.
But they are so worth seeing, not least for which, in some of these resorts, the old stretch of 61, the shore route as it was at the turn of the century, still exists and runs through these tiny little cabin resorts, which are now down the hill to the lake from the current modern highway. And I take as much care as I'm able to show folks where to find these, because it's a must-see. You were very lucky to have had this invitation. Good for you.
Yeah, and thanks a lot for calling, Susie.
Sure. Thank you.
We appreciate it very much. Well, Tony in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin has a question or comment. Hi,
hey, Tony.
Hi, I got a couple questions. One, how big is Fond du Lac, Minnesota? And, you know, do they have bed and breakfast there?
It's a shame. It's a great question, and I was disappointed to find that my lodging options were very thin. I either had to go down the 61 far away from the lake for about a half hour's drive or be willing to go up 35 to find one of the more modern hotels that way. And I will tell you, as I learned, that in the summer, particularly as you get close to Grandma's Marathon, there are no rooms. Fond du Lac is a shadow of what it once was. I cannot guess at the current population because somebody will call me and say it's more than that. But I saw maybe a total of 50 small houses, some scattered in the hills up in the back. I would say as many as 50 families and more in the summer season because I saw many closed and shuttered summer cabins along a small road along the lake shore. Very beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, so if I drove up there from Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, it doesn't sound like there would be really much for me to do.
It depends on your definition of do.
I mean, at the destination point instead of, you know, just going by it and stopping.
I spent an hour or more driving every small back lane and back road and was richly rewarded. Just the beauty. If nothing else, to sit cross-legged in front of that DAR plaque and to know that in that place for countless decades that there was trade coming and going, that there were hundreds of people settled at that fort, which, by the way, in its time was recreated more than once and finally was torn down altogether, I think, in the late 50s. They have not attempted to recreate it. To be in a place where other people have been, and to know what passed there, to me, is the essence of heritage travel and worth looking at. And back into the land, away from the river, across the main road, is one of the sweetest villages I've ever seen, with a green, and the National Register Bridge. This is a real home for real people and is worth seeing. And there is Chambers Park, which has been beautifully restored. I think both local, county, and state money went into the development of this park. There's a veterans memorial. There is a lakeside pavilion and a walkway. Beautiful at night. Very worth seeing. Your children can play happily there.
Our Fond du Lac. But I have one more question.
Yes.
What is your definition of Fond du Lac?
Of what it means?
The words, the meaning of the...
I wish you hadn't asked, because, of course, now that I need to know, it's gone right out of my head. I think bottom of the lake is the translation from early French.
That's
bottom
correct.
Of the lake.
The lake. and our Chamber of Commerce said first on the lake, and so there was a big controversy here.
in Fond du Lac,
I'm not getting involved.
Bottom of the lake, I believe, is correct.
He's correct.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890 as we talk about Lake Superior's historic North Shore with our guest, Deborah Morse-Kahn, author of the book, and it's published by Minnesota Historical Society Press. Barb in Madison is on board next. Let's go to Barb. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Barb. I grew up in Duluth.
Yay.
And it's funny because that just took me off subject, the last guy's call and what to do in Fond du Lac. I grew up skiing at Mont du Lac, which, if I'm not mistaken, is right in Fond du Lac. And the price of skiing there, the last time I was there for children, was $6, which was the same that we paid when we were children.
Very likely.
Because of the Spirit Mountain that went up when I was in high school, the prices at Mont du Lac stayed the same, and that's where I learned to ski race and all kinds of stuff. They also have a city park where the skiing is $1.50, and you get the skis.
Good promotion for winter sports.
In Duluth. Sorry?
Good promotion for winter sports. I'll do anything to bring people up the shore. It's what they live for.
And so when he was saying, well, what would I do there, there's also a big bike pass that's been there a while that you can take that direction, and you can fish. My relatives get together every summer and fish on the St. Louis River right there.
Yes, there's a number, it's an excellent point, there's a number of carefully groomed riverside parks, not just chambers, but small inlets that are well-maintained, modest facilities, but excellent fishing, and I don't think I ever took that drive without seeing a couple of folks on the river casting and a few boats offshore. It's true almost all the way up to East Duluth that you can find a place to put in a boat.
Oh, cool.
And then at Lester River, we used to go fishing every summer several times with my dad, but our thing was to run back in the woods and along the shore, and there were lots of those little cabins that looked deserted to us, but if you went in them, they had food left over, and it was from probably hunting season. Hunting and maybe fishing, but they were old cabins that were just left open that we were sure people were visiting every year. And then I just wanted to mention smelting, because it's a huge thing up the shore.
Yes, it is.
It's a big event every year.
You'll even see signs on bridges, particularly near the encampment area, which says no smelting from the bridge. And every time I've driven over that bridge, I've raised my right hand and swore I would never smelt off that bridge. But yes, you can still get
I have lots of stories about smelting. And then friends of mine in college, I'd never thought of doing this, but would go up the shore a little further and do rock climbing. And there's some favorite places for that up there.
There are. This book is very little about recreational activity and very, very much about the history and the visible remnants. The exception to that is that I became quickly enamored of the Lake Superior Water Trail system. I made heavy use of their maps. It allows one to kayak and canoe all the way up the shore with indicated landings, but also provides extraordinary shoreside detail, which I matched up with my USGS topo quads. But the Gitche-Gumee Trail, which is now being built from two harbors north of the Pigeon River, is strictly for non-motorized transport. Hikers, cyclists, I've seen people on motorized wheelchairs. That's the exception to the rule. It is an absolute wonder. It is being funded by a consortium of agencies and citizen groups. And then, of course, there's the Lake Superior Hiking Trail, which will take you up north. But in the book, it's important for folks to know that I will mention when these trails cross your path or what it is you're seeing when they've come down to the lake, but it is almost entirely about being in place rather than recreation. But I appreciate your comments.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling, Barb. I appreciate it very much. Adrian in Arena is up next, so let's go there. Hi, Adrian.
Hello.
Hello.
I have not read the book. But I wanted to tell you about an experience that I had.
Please.
My sister and I, in our 50s, took my mother and her sister in their 70s and 80s on a waterfall tour one spring. And we went around through Superior and along the lake and let them have little picnics right on the lake, you know, on where the beaches were. And there were waterfalls everywhere. And stopped at a little, like, garage sale and a roadside cafe, and then went back to a town. I can't remember the name of it. It starts with a G. It's not far from Superior.
Not far from Superior.
On the lake.
On the lake.
And it's in Minnesota.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Not far from Superior, Wisconsin.
Right.
Are you sure it starts with a G?
I'm pretty sure.
I'm sorry. I'm unable to come in quickly with that, with a name.
Well, we stopped there and had dinner and got a hotel room, and it was the full moon, and we had a hotel with a balcony, and it overlooked the lake, and we were able to watch the full moon eclipse and the Stairway to Heaven when the moon is eclipsed and it makes that little choppy waterway.
Sounds beautiful. Mentioning the waterfalls is my perfect opportunity, Larry, to make a huge plug for the series of state parks that run all the way up the shore. Gooseberry Falls, absolutely, and that will be the first one that you meet. And not only do you get these beautiful waterfalls, which anybody can visit. Not all trails are easily accessible, and I do try to take pains to let readers know how easy or difficult it is to reach these natural wonders. But the geology of the shore means that running from the top of the Sawtooth down to the shoreline is a straight drop, and the force of water on this volcanic rock has carved out deep basins, potholes, gouges. These are waterfalls of such beauty, and many of them, as our caller has pointed out, are not far from the road. And if you're tired of waterfalls, then you can admire a great range of CCC-era, WPA-era buildings, all of which are on the National Register. And most of the parks have first-class visitor centers with the maps, the guides, and very, very knowledgeable staff. My respect level went right to the stratosphere in working with the state park folks from north to south. And there, by the way, one of the books that I referenced a great deal, not only because it was delightfully written, but because it was such a treat, is a book solely on waterfalls of the North Shore. I'm going to ask the authors, if they're listening, to forgive me for not knowing the names, but just go to Amazon and put it Waterfalls North Shore. You're going to find the book. It's charming. So if water is your thing, that's how to do it. Thank you for your call.
Thanks, Adrian, for calling. And Nick in Green Bay, we'll go to you next. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Nick.
Hi. I don't know if you're going to be able to answer this because it's up in Michigan, but I thought you'd give it a try.
I'm sorry, I missed your question. Again, please?
Well, the question is, I used to live in Gwynn, Michigan, and I used to go to Marquette all the time to Lake Superior.
Well, that's a beautiful area.
Everybody kept telling me about the Huron Mountain Club, and I was wondering if you knew anything about it, because I keep getting stories that there's armed guards.
I'm sorry, I do not. I do not. I'm sorry to disappoint you.
Now, that one we can't help you with.
There are a number of private clubs on the shore. The most famous one is the Encampment Association, and many folks that I've spoken to who are visitors, folks who do not live there, talk about passing through this area of the shore where on the right and on the left are these carefully built wooden gate structures with numbers on them, and it says EA, Encampment Association, and then it'll have a gate number. I was able to research the story. It was, as I thought it might be, a vast tract of privately owned land from the turn of the century where those folks of money and business standing in the Twin Cities and Milwaukee and Chicago threw in their lot together and bought a large tract of old logging land and began to build originally rather rustic cabins and eventually an entire district of privately owned settlement. And though visitors are not free to simply, you know, drive in, it is private land, the story of the Encampment Association has interested people for a long time. We were able to find some wonderful old photographs some quotations from old letters of those who had been born in the vicinity and were hired to help in the first years. There's a second club in Beaver Bay called the Beaver Bay Club, built out on a spit of land over the lake, also privately owned. I was entrusted with a tour there and was delighted to find a beautiful, rather more modestly built, but many of the same famous names still attached to this club. And a beaver, by golly, they're still there, ran right across my path. And those are the only two privately owned associations that I am familiar with, which is, considering the stretch of shore, very unusual. The rest of it is open to the public and bristling with possibilities.
Thanks, Nick. Leslie in Preston, Minnesota, I believe, is up next. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Larry.
Hi, Leslie. You're from one of my favorite corners of the state.
I know it. It's just gorgeous here.
It is.
But my two passions, biking and Native Americans, studying Native American things. And
thank you.
My biking buddy and I were up on the Gitche Gumee Trail last summer, and we stayed. Well, my brakes went out up on that. What's that big point where you can overlook the, oh, I can't think of the name of it, Palisade Head.
Palisade Head, yes.
Yeah, we went up there and
yes,
looked off that, and then
there.
On the way down, my brakes went out.
Oh.
Yes. It's
yeah,
a
that
very
was, took 10
climb.
Years off my life.
You were brave to try that on a bicycle.
No, we were in my car. My bike's still
oh, you were in your car.
Path.
Worse yet. Okay,
yeah,
I hope you were all right.
On the way up.
It was
but
worth
we got
it if
to
you
our
got
hotel,
to the top, right?
Mom and Pop Hotel.
Yes.
The man said, oh, my gosh. He called and got his buddy who had a shop. He got it all lined up. He made our appointment, so we just had to drop our bikes off at 8 o'clock in the morning. He was the nicest guy. And then we biked all day from Silver Lake or Silver Bay back down to the end of the bike trail anyway. I can't think of the place, but it took us all day to bike, and we just stopped and looked at every place along the shore that we could get down to on foot, and then we just biked it back without stopping to get my car picked up in time.
You had a wonderful time.
Oh my gosh, it was the coolest thing.
Yeah.
I wish we would have had your book.
Palisade Head is a wonderful place. It is actually managed by the state park system. There are no camping facilities there, but anybody who makes their way to the top has probably one of the best views to the full north and to the full south anywhere on the lake. And if you're lucky, there's a freighter on the horizon. It's also very well known for bird migration counts twice a year. The Audubon Society and various citizen groups are there doing the migration counts, very, very important for monitoring the health of the ecosystem of the North Shore, which I am passionate about and make reference to a number of times in the book. And the Gitche Gumee Trail, when you wrote it, is probably more complete now. So when you say to the bottom of the trail, I know that since you were there, there's more trail. You did mention Native American life. First Nation peoples are in evidence from north to south. And in the book, I take great pains to direct people to publicly open sites, including two absolutely beautiful Native American cemeteries, one in Beaver Bay and one just north of Grand Marais in the now vanished Chippewa City, of which there are a number of National Register remnants. And then the community of Croftville, which is just north of Grand Marais, combines, I think, everything that you just said that you loved. It is Native American culture. It is the remnant of the old road. It is the old cabin resorts. It is the ecosystem. It is people living a slow life and just being outside. And then there's the lake, the water itself. I loved your call. Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. And Deborah, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. I'm enjoying the book very much. It's a perfect thing to have.
I'm delighted, Larry. Do I have a moment to let folks know where they can find it? Do we have any time left?
Sure.
We've already heard from everybody who pre-ordered from Amazon, and we know that Barnes & Noble regionally has heavy stock of the book. We've been disappointed that Borders still notes it as not available, but I'm a huge fan of independent booksellers, and I'm just going to quickly mention some of my great favorites, Bookends in Menominee, any of the Harry W. Schwartz stores in the Milwaukee area, and also Woodland Pattern, which I try to visit when I'm in Milwaukee, Bramble Bookstore, Viroqua, Brown Street Books, Rhinelander, and just to mention two more, Okooch Books in Richland Center, hello, Okooch Books, and the Reader's Loft in Green Bay. I know that the book is going to be available all up and down the shore. MHS has taken great care to partner with vendors there, so anybody in Duluth and heading north will find it readily available. This has been such a treat, once again, to be on your show. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Deb. Appreciate it very much having you with us today. Deborah Morris-Kahn of Minneapolis, Minnesota, author of Lake Superior's Historic North Shore, A Guided Tour. And really, if you're going to drive up there, you ought to have a copy of this book because it's going to be very useful and really add to and enrich your trip and your experience for just a few bucks, as a matter of fact. It's not all that expensive either. Well, I was kind of glad Leslie mentioned bicycling because our next topic coming up here is biking, and we'll talk biking Wisconsin and beyond with Eric and Kathy Schramm. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.